iTunes International, virus-free.
Around the world and down your street.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting Around the World. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by our correspondents in the city of Melbourne in the state of Victoria, Adam Devlin and Melissa Grima. Welcome back to our broadcast.
Yay!
Hello.
It's been a long time.
It's wonderful to be back on air.
Yes, it's been a long time. Lots of things happening. By the way, something occurred to me. Anzac Day has just happened. Victoria and New South Wales did not get a public holiday, but the rest of the states in Australia did. And I just want to explain. If any public holiday falls on a Sunday, it turns out that, I'm not sure it's the same for every public holiday, but in most states, they will give us, the humans, a day off on Monday, a public holiday, because Anzac Day is an example. It fell on a Sunday this year. Do you feel duped at all?
I feel
Look, on the day I do, but then I realise that at the end of the year, we get a public holiday for a horse race, and we get a public holiday so the footballers can parade through the streets on a Melbourne before the grand through the streets of Melbourne before the grand final on the Saturday. So, we're not missing out on any public holidays. We just get them on different days.
Yes, and you're referencing the Melbourne Cup, which of course is very famous around the world. We don't get a public holiday in the state of New South Wales because it's the Melbourne Cup. Melissa, what do you think of this whole business? Do you think maybe the federal government should control these holidays?
Look, I find it strange that Melbourne or Victoria has Labor Day public holiday weekend in March, where Sydney doesn't, or New South Wales doesn't. I don't like that Victoria has all their public holidays at the start of the year. We've just been granted one for the football in recent years, so now we have one after the Queen's birthday long weekend, which is in June. But it always kind of miffed me that we had, Christmas, New Year's Day, then Australia Day, 26th of January, we need to change the date. That's another conversation altogether.
Yep.
Then we have Labor Day on the first weekend of March. Then we have Easter, and then we have Anzac Day. Then you have June long weekend, and then we didn't have anything for the rest of the 6 months. So I'd like to see them spread out a bit. So, one a month for the whole year wouldn't be a bad thing, would it? But, that's getting a bit greedy. But if we could kind of spread them out a bit, so we got some relief from, our Monday to Friday lives for those of us who are Monday to Friday, I think that would be a great thing.
It is very strange, isn't it? I note this every year, regardless of what state we are in this country, is the fact that you've got that end of the year going up to the the Queen's birthday, which is of course not the Queen's birthday in June, and then it's nothing for ages. But then we can't just take a day off every month.
Why not?
Well, if I remember rightly, you used to take your birthday off every year at TNT when we worked together.
I have not worked on my birthday in decades.
Is that right?
I just recently had my birthday, and yes, I did take the day off.
Happy birthday. Well,
thank you.
And
it worked out really well this year, I must say. Sorry to interrupt. It was the Tuesday after Good Monday, after Easter Monday. So I got a 5-day weekend for Easter this weekend, this year, because of my birthday.
That's fabulous. Well, my birthday weekend usually falls on the Queen's birthday long weekend.
Oh, that's handy.
So, no, it's always good because I go away, except this year, my actual birthday falls on a Saturday for once. And they're doing the Queen's birthday long weekend the weekend after for some reason.
Henry, I just want to correct one small point, Henry, and that is earlier on you said that, some states get a public holiday for Anzac Day, and Victoria and I think South Australia and WA or something, there's a couple of us states don't. We do actually get the holiday. It's just celebrated on the Sunday, not on the Monday.
It's a very good point you make.
WA, South Australia and Queensland all had a public holiday today.
I think that the difference we're talking about here is whether you get a day off work.
Yeah.
And by the way, the states are that we don't are New South Wales, Victoria, and Tasmania. The rest do.
But all the tradies are on an RDO today anyway.
An RDO?
Roster day off. So they get one every, I don't know how many weeks, but they always get one after a long weekend. Mm. Well, a public holiday or whatever. So they had theirs today.
And with all the money they make. Adam, your point is taken, you know, because... This is a very serious holiday. You know, it's not a holiday. It's a commemoration of Anzac.
And this is exactly why it changed a few years ago with some states where they said, this isn't a celebration. It's a commemoration, and it needs to be commemorated on the day that it falls, which is the 25th of April. And so if that happens to be a weekday, and, you know, you will get a public holiday. But the public holiday still exists if it's a Saturday or a Sunday.
Yes.
And we actually had businesses closing here yesterday because it was Anzac Day. So, you know, it is, yeah. And, you know, it's a bit different to a celebration, a commemoration.
Yeah. And just to explain, if anyone doesn't know, and Adam, you or Melissa, you can probably explain this better than me. Anzac refers to the Australian and New Zealand armies, if you like.
Army Corps,
which in the First World War went to fight a very bloody war, Gallipoli, I believe, and other places. Isn't that right?
Yeah. The legend of the Anzac legend grew out of the Gallipoli campaign in World War One, where essentially Britain just sacrificed thousands of Australian and New Zealanders. Because it was that was an unwinnable battle, and so they sent us in there, you know, it's still to this day. I think it's one of our big our battles with the most lives lost in any war for Australians.
Yeah, and of course,
And of course, over the years, it's grown in importance as a commemoration. To the point where it's now, it really is commemorated, you know, across Europe, here in Australia and in New Zealand. It went through an interesting time in the 80s and 90s where it almost became a bit daggy, and it almost became a bit, you know, the younger generations really were ignoring Anzac Day.
Yes.
And I found it interesting to look back now. Here we are in the 2020s, and it's become this revered national day. And I find that an interesting sort of transition for it to go from this thing that not a lot of Australians really cared about not all that long ago to something now which is, you know, really revered.
It is interesting that it has grown in popularity, and it's a good thing that young people, you know, there was a time when people could go to Turkey, isn't it? To Gallipoli from Australia to commemorate this. And obviously we can't because of COVID. But what intrigued me when we could is the amount of young people who were really on top of this. And that really impressed me.
I lived in Turkey, so I've been to Anzac Cove. I could have gone for an Anzac Day ceremony, but I chose not to. There's a lot of Australian and New Zealanders who, you know, go to London and do their two-year rite of passage in London working there.
Yes.
And then as a rite of passage, they go to Turkey and go to Gallipoli. And a lot of Australians and New Zealanders working in London will fly over and just do Gallipoli for 3 days, have no interest in the rest of the country, and then fly out again. So there's a lot of patriotism, but it is also like the backpacker thing to do. And I have a friend who's Turkish-Australian, and she was living in Turkey for quite some time, and she went for the big 90-year celebration. And she was interested to go as an Australian-Turkish person, and she went to the Australian side, and she said it was absolutely appalling that it was just full of all these young backpackers, and they were all just getting drunk and drinking.
And they were Australian, Melissa?
Australian and New Zealand, yeah.
I have to...
Sorry, go, Adam.
No, I was just going to say I agree with you 100%. The last few years, they would show the crowds at Gallipoli, and it just started to look like it was just some other sort of stop on a backpacker party scene. I really was starting to not like the amount of people that were there. I was thrilled when I saw yesterday that there were two people. There was one Australian man and a Turkish man who walked up and laid a reef. And of course there were a few officials there, but it was essentially closed because of COVID. And to me, that was a much more serene, a much more emotional, and a much more meaningful experience than watching, you know, a couple of thousand backpackers all getting drunk and partying on the side of Gallipoli. I mean, that's not what Anzac Day is about.
And this is
after the 90-year anniversary. It was so appalling. Like, my friend said, they were so disrespectful, and everyone was like partying like they were at Ibiza. The Turkish government then said, from now on, there's no alcohol to be consumed because it was that bad. So since then, you can go there and camp for the dawn service, but there's no drinking allowed whatsoever. But it was a horrific shambles, and it was a real embarrassment that year.
And you were exactly right. Sorry.
Yeah, so go on.
I was just going to say, you're exactly right. The last time I saw those crowds there, it did just remind me of something like a dance party in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is disrespectful.
Yep. And I feel really silly now saying that, all the young people really respect this. anyway, if you've just joined us.
No, they do in Australia.
And a significant number that do actually respect it as well. It's just that it became that sort of, it was almost like, as Melissa just said a minute ago, it was like, you know, we're going to go and do our backpacking tour. And of course, part of that means dropping into Gallipoli. Without any real reasons as to why to be there.
Yes, on your way to Europe.
Monday Tunes International, virus free.
Around the world and down your street.
This is Bondi Tunes International broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, and I've got Gumby Girl, our correspondent, Melissa, and Grima, and Adam Devlin in the city of Melbourne. I just want to ask if you guys want to talk a bit of footy. I was reading a story which is awful, and you may have seen this on social media, my comments, and I asked a question. And by the way, there was a if you're listening in Europe, we call it soccer here in Australia. And I asked the question because it was this big flare-up and a lot of people fighting at a soccer game last night on Sunday. I asked the question, why would you bring bricks, iron bars and flares to a soccer match? And I call them bogans. And people always ask me, our listeners and people who I communicate with on social media ask me what bogans are. And I'm always kind of stretched to answer.
Chef?
Now that's the English version, isn't it?
It's a redneck.
And that's the American version. So does that mean that they're just like, you see, people always say they're bogans and they don't explain what bogans are because it's kind of hard to explain. Are these people who just chain smoke and drink beer all day and cause a ruckus everywhere they go?
Look, I'm in regards to the soccer hooligans, and let's call them what they are, I think a lot of that, it's not so much being a bogan. I think it's more cultural. It's more, identity based. It's you know, my old country is this land. Your old country is this land. Our two teams are fighting. Therefore, we must be enemies. We must be fighting. Mm. And these young lads, and let's be honest, they're young men.
Yes.
Who. And I don't know if it's cultural or the way they've been brought up or whether it's genetic or whatever, but these men, aggression seems to be how they handle issues.
You make a very good point about where you're from kind of thing. And I just want to reference something that happened on the 2nd of May, 1991. Melissa, I have no idea what age you were then, but I want to refer back to in...
I was 12.
You were 12? No, not in 1991. Yeah, okay, you liar. There was a major ruckus going on between the Serbs and the Croatians here in Sydney. Mm. And it was a real fireball of an event. And of course, in the early 90s, there were, well, let me just read this for you. In 1991, on May the 2nd, one of the first armed clashes between Serb paramilitaries and Croatian police occurred in the Battle of Borovo Selo. 19th of May, an independence referendum was held, which was largely boycotted by Croatian Serbs, and the majority voted in favour of the independence of Croatia. So you know what was happening on the other side of the world here in Australia, referencing you, Adam, is that there was a sense at that time, in the early 90s, that you're playing a soccer match, and it was the Croatians playing the Serbs, of course, and it all hell let loose because of what was going on politically on the other side of the world.
Because of geopolitics.
Mm. Melissa, what do you think about this?
I've been to a few soccer matches here in Melbourne, and the crowd's very different to if you went to an AFL match. So it's definitely not bogans that go to the soccer. And people tend to be European in background, and maybe South American. I don't know. I kind of think it's a bit of an overspill because, you know, I'm half English and I refuse to barrack for England in a World Cup. It makes sense that I should have got a British passport, but I can't stand the soccer hooligans from the UK. And I've been to matches in Turkey and I've been warned that things could go awry, you know, when one team loses and another wins. So I think it's kind of just overspill from the sport. What do you think, Adam?
I agree. You know, AFL and rugby absolutely get bogans going to those.
Mm.
Soccer, and I'm going to say something which is, I don't want anyone to take this out of context, but you're, and I'm saying this in inverted commas, but your Australian soccer fans can be a bit boganish as well.
Well, look, but, that's exactly what happened on Sunday night.
Yeah. But it's when you get these other ethnicities.
They're wogans, Adam.
Yeah, that's I love that term. When they bring their historical geopolitical issues into the soccer game, because that's our clan and our clan hates that clan, and the only time we can actually bring that out to the surface is at a soccer game. And I'm pumped full of testosterone. I'm an 18-year-old lout who you know, is disillusioned with the world already, and I need an enemy. Well, you know, mum and dad and grandparents and great-grandparents have said those people over there are the enemy. So, let's take this crowbar to the soccer game.
But that's my point. This is predetermined. Thank you, premeditated.
I mean, generational prejudice.
Bricks, iron bars, flares, they know there's going to be a war going on in this game. And how come they're let in with this stuff? I don't understand.
I don't know, because when you go to a match in Melbourne, there's a lot of security and they check you out.
You can't even get in with a set of nail clippers. So how do you get in with house bricks?
How we get in? Yes.
Is that a house brick in your pocket or are you just...
And iron bars.
Yeah, iron bars, crowbars, Molotov cocktails, house bricks, all perfectly fine, but I need your nail clippers, sir.
Let's party on. Let's have a big party.
And don't you dare have a plastic knife or fork.
Yeah, because, you know, that could be dangerous.
I love the sound of breaking glass, especially when I'm lonely. I need the noises of destruction. Glass.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
Henry O'Donovan!
Okay, let's move on to, I was going to say the elephant in the room, but the elephant's been in the room for a year or more, COVID-19, which is really now in the year 2021. I don't know why they don't update the name of that. Lots going on. The state of West Australia. Perth was locked down along with another town called Peel for 3 days. It's ending at midnight tonight, I believe. So the lockdown in Perth is finishing tonight. I'm not sure if that's the third day or not, but
today's the third day.
Yeah, because it was announced on Friday.
Okay. I sometimes feel we're going around in circles with all this stuff because hasn't Victoria had its problems in the last couple of days?
Well, we had a guy. Basically, what happened is a man who lives in Perth. Somehow, and I will never understand how this is allowed to happen, but he flew to India to get married, and then flew back to Perth, and then flew to Melbourne, and then flew back to Perth, and he had COVID. He caught COVID in India. Go figure.
The gentleman who flew to Melbourne wasn't the wedding guy. The guy who got it.
No, he was. Yeah, he got it up in the hotel. Yeah, but this goes to show how easily and thoroughly this thing can spread. So you know, we haven't. Thankfully, it doesn't look like we've had any cases here in Melbourne. Well, certainly not that I've seen from this, which is fantastic. But that's just luck. That's not anything else but pure luck.
It's not that hard to get an exemption to travel, to be honest. You just have to apply for it online.
And yet, so why are there nearly 9,000 people in India, Australian citizens in India, who can't get home, and yet this man was allowed to fly to India to get married and then fly home again?
Because
it makes no sense.
A lot of people can't afford the airfare. So I've got a friend that's been stuck in India for a year now. He just wants to get home. He can't. On Friday evening, I had dinner with a bunch of people that I used to work with in China, and one of them had just gotten back from Norway, on New Year's Eve. Now, she had booked her flights to and from Norway before COVID kicked off. So she was able to come back and get a hotel quarantine, and she didn't have to pay for the quarantine because her ticket had been booked previous. So that was a loophole that she got out of. But she had told me that there are Facebook forums with 100,000 Australians stranded overseas, and they go to this Facebook page and they share their stories. And there are hundreds of thousands of Australians who are livid and angry at this government because they can't get home. And the trauma is real.
I would just like to you're absolutely right, Melissa, and I just want to mention one thing, and that is earlier, not so long ago, the Australian government gave Matthias Cormann an RAAF jet, free of use, to fly around Europe to campaign to get the job as head of the OECD.
Which is?
What does that sound for? I have no idea.
It's the Organization of Economic and Cultural Development.
Yes!
So then $4,000 an hour this jet was costing.
who paid for that, Adam?
We did. The Australian taxpayer. Now, we've got nearly 9,000 people in India, Australian citizens, who want to come home and can't get home. They can't get home for a number of reasons. One of them is exactly what you said, Melissa. It's they haven't got the money to buy the ticket to come home because a couple of reasons. Tickets are ridiculously expensive at the moment, and India is an incredibly poor country. Secondly, these people, there just aren't the number of flights. So even if they had the money, there just aren't the tickets to buy. And the government's talking about reducing those flights into Australia even more, which I tend to agree with. But why don't we put a couple of RAAF airplanes into Delhi, load them up with Australian citizens? I mean, India is the worst country on the planet at the moment with this pandemic.
And this, you know, Adam, this was my next part of
we
this conversation.
We need to get our citizens. If we care at all about our citizens, we would get them out of that country right now.
Can I just add something to this?
Yes.
A friend of mine is an international pilot with Virgin. And so what the government has done is they've retrained Qantas and Virgin pilots and other international airline flight attendants, and they're working hotel quarantine. So since hotel quarantine's opened up in Melbourne, my friend who was a flight attendant's working hotel quarantine. And so people come in and they go, welcome home, how great is it to be home? And she said there's a number of people that have said, oh, I'm not Australian, I've never been here before. But because they have the money and can afford first class, they're flying into Australia. And I think it's hideous that they're allowed to do that when so many Australians are stranded and they want to get home and they can't.
And I just remind everybody that our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, towards the end of last year said he would have all of the Australians who wanted to come home by Christmas.
Yeah.
And that was a promise he made. And here we are.
Where are we at? Let's say you guys are talking about money a lot here, and it saddens me to think that if you can't afford to get back to Australia and pay a lot of money, you ain't getting back. But if you've got the money, you can come back, if I can be very simplistic about this. And it's, you know, I want to talk about India in a second, but it's not just, you know, the case you've said about India. It's everywhere, isn't it? I mean, there are Australians stuck everywhere. What happens if you went to Britain a year ago? Maybe you were on a holiday or whatever, and you can't get back to Australia. You've got to find a way of paying rent. You've got to get a job over there, but you may not actually have a work visa.
Well, you would be on a tourist visa, so...
Well, that's my point. Like, what are these people doing? I don't see the...
Can I say, there's some things I struggle with, like a friend of mine, her flatmate moved out and moved to the UK, and he did that at around Christmas time, because he wants to go to the UK and do his two-year work. I just think that's highly irresponsible. I was at my friend's house yesterday, and her brother-in-law is he's Greek-Australian. The family's Greek-Australian, and the brother-in-law's like, yeah, we're going to go move to Greece. Now, I think that at this late stage, if you decide to leave Australia in this current climate, and like the guy that got married, why should you have precedent over coming back to someone who's been trying to get back for over a year?
Yep, I hear you.
I absolutely agree. It's disgusting.
I don't think...
But also, if we can afford $4,000 an hour to fly Matthias Klormann around Europe to go on job interviews, we can afford to send that very same jet to New Delhi and fill it with people who need to come back and can't afford to get here.
Yeah.
It's interesting that money still matters and will always matter with these kind of things.
Unfortunately, we live in a capitalist society, and therefore those with the most money get the most advantages.
Yeah. This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney. Melissa and Adam are with me from Melbourne in Victoria. I want to talk about India. Australia today has announced considering sending help to India as it records record case numbers. The situation is dire there. There's no doubt about it. Now, a lot of people are saying, why are we sending people, you know, help to India when we have this problem at home? Thoughts, guys?
We're not burning people in the streets in Sydney or Melbourne or Adelaide or Perth or Brisbane. Yeah. Our hospitals haven't run out of oxygen, and so therefore people are just dying in the waiting room because there's no oxygen to give them. Sure. We could always do more to help our own people here in Australia. But I don't think we're going to get any sympathy anywhere in the world by saying, oh, no, we've got to look after ourselves first at this point in time. I mean, Australia, we've got next to no cases. We're not living in lockdowns anymore. I mean, of course, you know, we've just, WA's or Perth and Poole have just had a little lockdown, and Melbourne's had them, and Brisbane's had them, and Sydney will have them, and we'll have them again here. That's the new reality of life, living with COVID. That's what those little lockdowns that we have, because we have managed it so well, that's our worst case scenario, really, in Australia. You know, when you look at somewhere like India, you know, where they've got like a whole city blocks that have just turned into crematorium, where they're just dragging bodies,
burning them. I know, it's horrific stuff. They're actually cremating people on the fly, basically.
Yeah.
But can I don't want to sound harsh.
Mm-hmm.
I get why they can't do a lockdown in India. People have, they live hand to mouth. They can't afford to stay inside. I mean, a lot of people in India don't have homes and they live on the street. So yeah. I understand why the government has said we don't want to enforce that. But what I don't understand is how haven't they said no to events happening? Like, you see all these religious festivals on the news and there's hundreds of thousands of people all in one.
The Ganges River, I mean, for goodness sake, that is so polluted as it is, you know.
It's pretty much, I think, a case of this. You've got the second most populous nation in the world. And the vast majority of that population is under or non-educated.
Yes.
Most of them are poverty stricken. And the most important thing to their existence is eating and their religion. And if their religion says, you know, tradition says you go and you do this function, they're going to go and do that function. It doesn't matter what anybody tells them about the risks involved. That those risks mean nothing to them.
These are the two things they have in life.
Yeah.
Isn't it true?
Yep. Yeah.
And they've got nothing else.
And they're told that this religious belief of theirs will protect them and will provide for them. And so, of course, in times of great need, of great sort of disaster, they're going to turn to those religious beliefs and ceremonies. So, and also the third point is, if you've got, you know, 50 million people deciding to turn up to something, how's a couple of thousand police going to stop them?
Well, no, that's true.
Melissa, you were a tour guide for years. And you mentioned that you lived in Turkey. You've been obviously all over the world. It seems a lot in Asia. What do you think of these kind of tours that, for instance, Intrepid, that you work for yourself? This must be crippling. I mean, Jesus, this is probably a rhetorical question, but how bad is it for companies that, you know, gave people, especially in Europe, a chance to see what it's like in the middle of China and places like that? I mean, exotic tours, if you like, but rough and ready. It really is disastrous. Do you ever think to yourself, I'm glad I got out of that business?
Oh, I'm thankful. So I'm like, I'm thankful all the time. And I say it to people all the time. And like last Friday, when I was sitting around with a bunch of ex-tour leaders that all worked in China, you know, a lot of us recently got out of the travel industry and we were just thanking our lucky stars that we made that decision when we did. And I worked in Asia and I also managed tour leaders in Asia. And when I was managing tour leaders, a lot of our tour leaders were Thai and Cambodian. And they were making a lot of money for a local wage. And of course they were supporting their families. And I don't know how many of them were actually successful in saving the money that they were making and what they did with it. But a lot of them are struggling now, and I have seen, one of the Cambodian leaders is now got a chicken stand, so he makes chicken rice, and he sells it on the side of the road. Tour leader that I met that I worked with in Thailand, she's now selling orange juice. So yes. I'm seeing all these local tour leaders in Southeast Asia having to, you know, find other means of employment because they've got no work at all.
And Adam, they've got no social safety net either to fall back on.
None at all. None.
I just want to mention, and I think we talked about this before, in Bali, the island of Bali, which is very popular for tourists in Australia, and in fact, all over the world. A lot of Americans go to Bali, or did. When they, you know, when COVID hit Bali, basically, that was the end of tourism, which was 90% of their business, and they went back to getting seaweed out of the rivers, which is what they did back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s before tourism started. Yeah. And they turned the seaweed, I think they created some kind of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of what they did with this medicinal kind of liquids out of seaweed. And they went back to their own, my kitten's going nuts in the background.
They went back to the traditional ways of living.
And the rivers were all polluted from tourists, and they've all they're all cleaned up now. And also the other thing is changing your job, just going back to what you're saying, Melissa, changing your job sometimes can be a positive thing, because you might realize that you didn't like what you were doing anyway.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I was trying to get out of the travel industry for a long time, and I'm just so grateful that I persevered and I stuck with it. You know,
I think tourism is really important. Human beings are incredibly inquisitive people, and we like to travel. We like to go to places we haven't been before. And we like to understand things that we don't understand, which, you know, this is why we've got the technology we have today. I think COVID for me has given us the opportunity to stop and forced us all to stop and just sit and go, well, do I need to go there? Do I need to do this? Do I need to do that? Or is it just what we've always done?
Recently you've been able to go to the theatre again. You must sort of think, because I'm just getting the other side of this coin, because I know what you're saying, but it must be fantastic. I guess you would even appreciate the ability to go out and do this stuff much more than you would have pre-COVID.
Absolutely, but it also now has a real tinge to it. When I go to the, I went to the theatre just recently, as you mentioned, and I love the experience of being back in a theatre, being back part of an audience and seeing a live performance again. That was amazing.
Yes.
But it was tinged with this sort of underlying, almost subliminal fear of, well, this person sitting next to me, I'm not wearing a mask. This person next to me is not wearing a mask.
It's a psychological thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and so it's like, and that may fade over time. It probably will, but
since I went to Sydney.
Melissa, I was going to reference that. You did come to Sydney, and I think you mentioned that it was kind of unnerving because everyone in Sydney is having a party. No one's wearing masks anywhere, indoors, outdoors, in cars, whatever. Everyone, and it must be unnerving. Going to the theatre in Melbourne, or you coming to Sydney, Melissa, and seeing such freedom.
Look, Sydney felt like a culture shock to me. I felt like I was in another country. I couldn't believe how different it was over the border, and the fact that life was quite normal, and we went through this 8 months of lockdown, so there was a lot of anger, and I just had to unpack those feelings, and it took me a couple of goes out, like at bars, and just looking how different life was, and then I just had to like shed this COVID blanket and get on with it. So there was definitely a culture shock feeling.
I felt the very same when I went to Queensland for Christmas and New Year.
Yes.
There was this day in between Christmas and New Year. I went from Brisbane up to central Queensland to spend a few days with my sister and her family. And one of the things that we did, very exciting holiday activity, was go to a Bunnings in Gladstone.
You went for the sausage sizzle, tell me, because I don't have to destroy you anymore.
for our listeners in your Bunnings warehouse, Bunnings warehouse is this massive kind of store with all the do-it-yourself kit and
the lowest prices are just the beginning.
Oh, thanks for that, Adam. So you went to Bunnings for a day out, did you?
Yeah, and we and of course I had just come from Melbourne, which had been for 3 months in you know lockdown, couldn't leave my premises for any longer than an hour a day. No, can't go longer than 5K, all that sort of stuff. And I got to central Queensland, and no one even had a face mask, let alone wear one.
You sound so surprised.
I was like, and so we walk into the, and my sister that I was visiting and staying with lives in this little tiny town called Baroran, which has got about, I don't know, about three people. And so, of course, I didn't expect anything there, but I thought going into Gladstone, which is like a major regional city in Queensland, I thought, well, of course there'll be stuff everywhere there. Nothing. Walked into Bunnings and they had a sign that said, you know, be COVID aware, please sanitize your hands as you walk in. And I thought, oh, they'll have a hand sanitizing thing there. I walked in and they had a little card table set up and there was a bottle with a hand pump on it with hand sanitizer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to pump the top of the bottle and the girl said, no, you've got to pick the bottle up for it to work.
Oh, that's a bit silly.
And I went, doesn't that defeat the purpose? And she went, what do you mean? I said, I've got to pick that bottle up, pump it, put the bottle back down, sanitize my hand. She went, yeah, your hands are sanitized. I went, but if the person who picked the bottle up before me had COVID on their hands, then COVID's on that bottle. She went, yeah, but your hands are now sanitized because you've just used the sanitizer. I went, oh my God.
Yeah, I was actually, I went into a takeaway place yesterday on Anzac Day. We rarely get takeaway, but we went into the takeaway shop and there's all these signs.
Was it chicken and chips?
It was, yes, actually. Now that you mention it, Adam, it was chicken and chips, you vegetarian. Anyway,
lunch,
we went in.
A lunch of lore.
I went into, yes, you're right, I should explain that. Back in TNT, back in 89, 1990, myself and Adam used to gorge ourselves at midday. We couldn't wait till 1 o'clock for lunch out of that office. And yeah, we get fish and chips, chicken chips, anything with chips. But anyway, yesterday I went into this takeaway, and this is how slack Sydney is at the moment. You got this sign saying you've got the QR code thing happening.
Yep.
No one pays any attention to that. You got this, you know, the way they've got these little circles on the floor so you stand distancing and all that sort of thing. No one paid any attention to that. There was no signing in. There was nothing. And it was like, This is like a relic, this takeaway shop, from a time when you had to do all this. But what I found amusing, in a weird way, was the fact that, really, they just don't give a damn. And no one is policing this. No one.
The complacency has just fallen straight back in. There was an article on the news tonight saying that, you know, up to 40% of people on Melbourne trains now are no longer wearing masks.
Oh, that's one. I'm one of the people that doesn't wear one on a tram.
Are you supposed to?
Yes, it's compulsory.
why aren't they? Okay.
Why is it not being policed?
Yeah. Why?
You know,
I just because I don't have to wear one anywhere else, and I just get on the tram and I'm like, oh, I don't have one. I don't take
And look, that's easy enough to do. I've done it myself. There was a couple of like 2 weekends ago, we were going into the city to catch up with a couple of friends for a drink. We decided it was a nice afternoon. We would walk to the train station. Normally I would drive my car to the train station. My masks are in my car. We were halfway to the station and I went, oh my Lord, I don't have a mask on me. And it was like, well, we haven't got time to go back to the car to get one. I'm just going to have to ride the train without a mask. There's nothing I can do. But I felt awful doing it because I was sitting there without a mask, judging other people for not wearing a mask.
It is easy. It's easy to forget, isn't it?
Yeah.
I want to ask you both. You both drive cars. You both worked in offices. That's a perfect tense I'm using.
Absolutely.
Worked in offices. When do you think? Now, my partner also worked in an office, and she works from home, but they're talking about bringing her back in 2 days a week into the office in Surrey Hills in Sydney. You guys both worked in offices. Is this going to return? Because things are better in Melbourne now. Do you feel that you're going to be driving your car soon?
No.
Oh, dear.
There is no going back to the old normal. The old normal is dead. It's extinct. It's like the dodo and the dinosaur. It's extinct.
It depends on who you work for, really. Is the answer.
Yeah.
Look, the Melbourne City Council is budgeting and trying to figure out how they're going to run the Melbourne City with 35% of the office staff not there, and that's what they're expecting not to come back.
Melissa, are you going to be going back to the office? I know that you were on the road, you're a salesperson, and you were on the road a lot in your car anyway. What's the situation with you?
So for me, I work in like the business sector, so I deal with other businesses. And because I work in sales, we have to collate the information that we get from our customers and feed it back through to those that are above us. So we're across what a lot of different industries are doing. And there's a couple of trends that we're seeing, and I'm seeing these amongst our friends as well. So you've got some businesses who are really happy for to do a work from home situation and have the new flexible working policy. So now the new trend is people are working from home on Monday and Friday, and they're going into the office Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. There's been a bit of now people are ordering catering and things like that. Thursday is the new busy day for that, because Thursday is the new Friday, right? Offices are getting catering companies to do lunches on a Thursday to kind of entice people back into the office. So
we've got to go soon. I just want to quickly ask about office space, because I did send you a link to a documentary on the ABC, Adam, regarding what you do with all this office space. And lots of people suggested exactly what you suggested. Why not, you know, use it for the arts? And I'm thinking, yeah, big business will never go for this. what do you do with all this office space? What's going to happen?
Well, there's a few things that cry out to me that we've got a problem. We've got two problems, and those two problems provide each other with a solution. We have all this empty office space, and we've got homelessness. Hello, let's put the homeless in the empty office space.
Who's going to pay for that?
Would Daniel Andrews?
That's simple.
Would your premier agree? I know you've got a Labour government in Victoria, but would your premier look into that seriously? And would big business go, nah?
There's a lot of businesses that are trying to get people to come back full time.
Yeah.
And they're not giving them a choice. So it'll be interesting to see what unfolds. I think we'll have more of an idea by the new financial year, personally.
I agree. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But also look at it this way, is a huge portion of the workforce now know that they can work from home because they've been doing it for a year.
And it's worked.
And we have low unemployment at the moment. It's easy to find a new job for a large portion of the community at the moment. So if you've been working from home for a year or more, and then your company says, no, now I want you back in the office 5 days a week, a significant number of people are going to say, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to go to
get another job.
I'm going to go get a job at the opposition, because they're going to let me work at home 2 or 3 or 4 days a week.
Interesting, isn't it?
A lot of companies are saying, too bad, you've had your time at home, you've got to get back.
Yeah, and they're going to find that they're going to lose staff.
This is fascinating, isn't it?
A lot of people have enjoyed working from home. They've enjoyed the freedom and the flexibility of working from home. Yes, a lot of people have taken advantage of it. And, you know, there's always going to be people that take advantage of any situation. You need to put things in place to, you know, you can work from home and be fully supervised. You can be micromanaged from work, but by your supervisor who's working from home and you're working from home. We have the technology to do all of that now. And I think that's one of the things that coming out of...
than have that happen to me.
Obviously. You'd rather what?
I'd rather work in an office and not be monitored than, hey, you can work at home.
Yeah, there is talk of, I've heard about a situation where a company is taking a photo of the person at home behind their desk every 15 minutes.
Mm.
That's a bit of a worry.
I find that disgusting.
It's intrusive, all right.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's fine. I'll just put a photo of myself in front of the camera cam.
Okay, we got to go. I just want to ask you quickly.
I think what working from home for the last period of time, 12, 14 months, whatever it is, has shown Australian workers is that rigid Monday to Friday in the office from 9 to 5 or whatever your hours were, that rigid thing was just completely fabricated. It's not necessary.
And it was all wrong.
You can have some sort of combination of working from home and working in the office, you know. And that can be, and if you've got good staff and a good company, you can, that can be flexible enough so that, you know, employee A only comes into the office once a month because that's all that they need to do. Employee B comes in, you know, every second Friday because that's what they want to do. Employee A comes in Monday to Friday from 9 to 5 because that's their preference.
It's very practical,
too. This is an opportunity to let people decide, in consultation with the people they work for, what works best for me as an employee, that I can be your best employee.
Yeah. No, you sound absolutely right about that. Just before we go, we're not going to get hold of our entertainment reporter this week, who is Rachel Brunson in the ACT. But do you guys watch the Oscars?
I saw it was on.
Okay, that's the end of that.
No, I watched in it.
I watched bits of it. Yeah. I watched bits of it today, but yeah.
I didn't know it was on, otherwise I would have tuned in.
Oh, well, if you were really interested, Melissa, you would have known it was on.
Oh, well, you know, because of COVID, I've switched off the news, so.
Good for you.
And look, I understand that, Melissa, I've done the same thing. I'm a news junkie. I watch news all the time, all the day. I reckon I'm watching less than half of the amount of news I used to watch.
There you go.
Yeah, just get on Netflix. They did actually say that the Oscars was a bit of, well, major flop this year.
It was rather embarrassing ending.
Yes, so I believe. I don't know what that ending was, do you?
Yeah, basically, and I'm going to get his name wrong, Chadman Bergman, whatever. There was a young actor who was nominated for Best Actor, and he recently died. And everyone was tipping that he would win the Oscar. And so this year, instead of ending it with the Best Film, they went Best Film, Best Actress, Best Actor, expecting that it would end with a posthumous award for this actor. The only issue is that Anthony Hopkins won for The Father instead. So it ended. So it ended with them going, and here it is, the big one for the night. It's like, you know, Best Actor. Oh, Anthony Hopkins. Okay. And he's not here tonight, and he hasn't filmed anything to say anything, so good night.
Yeah, and they didn't, like, he hasn't appeared for the other awards either. I wonder if he's okay.
He did post something on Twitter today saying that he was in Wales visiting his father's groom's headstone, his father's grave.
Right.
He's living his life. He's doing his own thing.
And I don't blame him in a way. Okay.
And why would he turn up? Because everyone knew this other guy was going to win.
He screwed it up royally. Look, Melissa Greenberg and Adam Devlin in Melbourne, thank you so much for spending so much time with me here on Bondi Tunes.
Thank you.
Been an absolute pleasure. We will talk again soon.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Thank you.
gently tuning in on you. If I was young, it didn't stop you coming through.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.